Jenny had a vision for the spent quarry in Brentwood Bay. She could see it becoming a beautiful garden haven, overflowing with lush greens and colorful blooms. Decades later, what she imagined became a reality, the Butchart Gardens, a National Historic Site of Canada, even. People from all over the world come to walk through the gardens, the sunken gardens, the rose garden, the Japanese and Italian gardens, and the Mediterranean one. Couples of all ages stroll through the paths on dates to let the romance of the gardens renew their love for one another. I can't help but think of the Creator's vision for the Garden of Eden and see that first couple stroll through the gardens hand in hand, Adam and Eve. As beautiful as it is, the Butchart Gardens are more like a museum display of 900 types of flora. The crowds of people move through the designated paths like they are in a queue for the Sistine Chapel, forced forward in one direction like an ever-flowing stream, winding their way through the labyrinth of the various gardens. One has little time to linger and to contemplate the petals of the petal formations of, say, the dahlias. Now, I know I'm touching on a really special place, but bear with me as I think of this as an illustration for this talk. There are a few places in Butchart Gardens to rest, to step away and come into an alcove and steal a kiss. Maybe you have done that. Good for you. If you did find a restful bench, it wouldn't be long before you would encounter someone else coming into that area and using it as a photo booth to capture a moment of beautiful bliss and put it in their pocket and take it home with them. No one can truly rest in the arms of their beloved in these gardens because they are a highly controlled canvas of cultivated plants and specially designated displays of certain colors and shapes and textures set along narrow pathways. A mere backdrop to the stage we all truly long to walk into, a garden of delights, the Garden of Eden. The Butchart Gardens aren't wild enough. We can't even say really that they represent the Garden of Eden. There are just a few things beyond our reach in this controlled environment where only certain designs are created and sit there untouchable, unreachable. There are no turtle doves, except during Christmas when they're, you know, on display for the 12 days of Christmas. There are no turtle doves singing their love song as in the Garden of the Song of Songs, when the first flowers appear in the springtime. When the winter is past and the rain comes to bring the tulips to bloom, there is no bird song to celebrate their appearing. And you wouldn't want to break out in an aria in the Italian gardens. Little singing happens. All the gazelles and stags do not leap about there either, but look through the deer fences at the delicious roses growing by the hundreds in the heart of the garden. My beloved is a gazelle or a young stag, the woman says, in the book of the Bible called the Song of Songs. Look, she swoons. There he stands behind our wall, gazing in at the windows, looking through the lattice. He looks for the one thing he desires above all others, her. My beloved speaks to me and says to me, arise, my love, my fair one, and come away. The beloved calls to his lover to come out of her house and enter the garden of delights where love blooms. These words are similar to Jesus' words. Come to me, all you who are weary and are carrying heavy burdens, and I will give you rest. Jesus, our beloved, calls to all those bereft of that restful, beautiful love that lifts the spirits, draws us out of our sorrows, our isolation, our sin and despair, and into a burden-free love. He says these words after dealing with the foolishness of his generation, who plays immature games that keep people tied up in knots with highly controlled and designated pathways, doctrines and dictums and regulations. People are being told by religious leaders just how they are to stay in line to please God. The restrictions to knowing divine love and blossoming in life are not coming from the right place, not coming from the one who says he is gentle and humble in heart. He says coming to him means coming to rest in God in this wild life. Jesus has come leaping through the gardens of his generation, singing out a love song to those weary of judgments and prejudices, calling them to come away and to dance in the new garden where delight is found in a forgiving, gentle love of the Creator. Jesus isn't happy with the childlike behavior of these prudish leaders, who are doing what they can to tell people how to live a holy life, and of course, following the law of God. But he says that they sit in the marketplace calling out to one another, "We played the flute for you and you didn't dance, we wailed and you did not mourn." As immature children, too young and naive to see the wisdom of adults, they make wrong judgments. They are inexperienced at understanding the ways of God, the ways Jesus has come to reveal. Jesus says his generation saw John the Baptist neither eating nor drinking and thought he was mentally disturbed, while they looked at Jesus feasting and drinking with sinners, and he was labeled a glutton and a drunkard. These immature judgment calls of the leaders revealed how much the people then were under inspection and burdened by their foolish assessments. The leaders of his generation unwisely tried to control the environment, cultivating a display of certain actions as superior over others. In this garden, few people could find delight and gladness. Jesus has come to his generation to tell them to bring out the flutes and play the song of weddings and parties. He's teaching them the wisdom of God found in his gentle, merciful love for all he has created. Nestled in the wisdom books of the Bible is a popular drinking song, perhaps even a wedding song, called the Song of Songs. It is very religiously profound. It is, even though it draws upon things that we, or it speaks poetically of things we think to be just about sexual love. And of course, that is there as well. The lyrics of this poetic love song put it firmly in the context of God's passionate and troubled relationship with humanity, something which is clearly evident in the rest of the stories of the Bible. This song is a sacred text for the way it points to the healing of the deepest wounds in the created order, even wounds in God's own heart made by human sin. In it, we are taken back to the Garden of Eden and moved forward to the coming of the beloved Son of God. In the story of Genesis, the Garden of Delights, which is the word for Eden, Adam and Eve lived and loved each other in joy and harmony with the flora and fauna there and with the Creator. A rupture happens on these three levels, though, because of sin. Man and woman would relate in an unequal relationship. Humanity and nature would be at odds, and humanity and God's bond of friendship and love was wounded. Tension and alienation replaced partnership and delight in all these arenas of life. This has resulted in a deep sadness in the world that lingers to this day. In the story of the garden of the Song of Songs, the healing of these ruptures is poetically rendered. Firstly, the man and woman embrace in the full ecstasy of mutuality. Two people, equally powerful, equally passionate, equally approaching each other in intimate love, truly then find themselves and each other. And secondly, the natural world rejoices with them. Birdsong and blooms surround them. This lover's garden represents the place where life may be lived fully in the presence of God. And though God's name is not to be found in this garden love affair, it nonetheless speaks of God and humanity as beloved and lover. Sexual love in the Bible is often seen as the arena for the formation of the soul. The mystics of the Christian tradition saw it as so. In his spiritual canticle, John of the Cross saw an image of God in the representation of the male lover as a leaping deer. Seeing the swiftness with which he shows and then hides himself, John writes, he usually visits devout souls in order to gladden and liven them, and then leaves them to try and humble and teach them. The devout soul desires to cultivate intimacy with God and doesn't shy away from the delight God desires to bring to them. The devout soul hears Jesus say, come to me and I will give you rest, and hears the heart of a lover to the beloved. Now, the church has shied away from the mystical and religious understanding of the love song and the romance stories of her scriptures. But to do so was to keep the good news of God from growing wild and free in the garden of this generation. I agree with scholar Ellen Davis that the cultivation of real intimacy is the greatest social and spiritual challenge of our time. Davis writes, like the love of God, profound love of another person entails devotion of the whole self and steady practice of repentance and forgiveness. It inevitably requires of us suffering and sacrifice, true love, deep, intimate love. But the modern secular mind aims to keep them separate. That is the suffering and sacrifice part. The modern Christian can read the Song of Songs and hear the beloved God of the garden cry out with the love we have witnessed in Jesus. He invites us to come to him who is gentle and humble of heart, and in so doing, be partners in the healing of the ruptures between people, between man and woman, between humanity and nature, and humanity and God. Our generation is bereft of true love more than ever. Instantaneous contacts, temporary relationships, high mobility, taking commitments lightly and setting them aside all too easily, souls are stunted and even arrested permanently. Like children in the marketplaces of social media, most make the wrong calls and do not seek or find the rest for their souls in a love the Creator hopes all everywhere can find and enjoy. Now, genuine intimacy brings us into contact with the sacred. Any concern we have about living a holy life is all about, what it's all about is found in fostering bonds of love that reach into the true and deepest longings of our hearts. Human life is sanctified through genuine intimacy. God says to us, arise, my love, my fair one, and come away. Jesus says, come to me, and I will give you rest. Come away into the garden, off the paths, and into the wildness of love, and let it take you where you long to go, to be in love, in the garden of delights. This is the reality we are invited to participate in with God. We need not walk the designated paths of a humanly controlled and cultivated garden set as a mere backdrop for photo ops, though romance does bloom in the Butchart Gardens. What I see in the scriptures today are an invitation to renew our devotion to healing the ruptures of our generation. We can do this by falling in love with God. Fall in love with others. Deepen our bonds of love for each other and renew our devotion to the whole of the flora and fauna of this great garden called Earth. Go and fall in love this summer. Amen.